Welcome to a new episode of my podcast, Helder Horen met Rosa de Boer, which roughly translates to clairaudient with Rosa. And this is an English podcast because I'm incredibly excited to be interviewing Lynn Cottrell, medium and spirit artist from the UK. And I consider you, Lynn, my mentor on this path of psychism and mediumship development. So I'm so happy that you're here today. Thank
Bless you,
you.
thank you. Thank you. Thank you
Yes.
for asking me.
Yes. So I met you at the Arthur Findlay College, where I went the first time together with my father. And we came into this beautiful week of psychic development. And we both were like, well, we're not quite sure what we can expect. And then we ended up in your group. And we both are still so thrilled that that happened because we had an amazing week with you. And what we both really liked is that you're so authentic, and the way you can tell the stories about our experiences as a human in this physical world, but also interacting with the spirit world, it's just so illuminating and clearly very funny. So I would love to have you talk a little
Stop
bit
it.
today too to our audience. And first, I wanted to say to the audience that I've seen some of your work as a spirit artist. So you do not only communicate with spirit as a medium, but you also draw spirit and you make art influenced by spirit, if I say that a little bit
That's right.
correctly.
Yeah,
Yes.
that's
Can you
right.
say a little bit more about how that works, being a spirit artist?
So it's there's two sides to it, or a number of sides to it, really. One is the side which where we concentrate on the evidence of survival, the proof of survival. So when we're working, we work mediumistically. We're many years have passed where we've been called psychic artists. Really, we should be called spiritual artists or spirit portraitists, because it isn't a psychic ability, it's a mediumistic ability. So the evidential part of it is where we would draw someone who came close to us from the spirit world, perhaps a member of the family, a brother, a sister, a father, a mother, a partner, who comes forward to prove their survival, to prove that they're still around us in this physical life. And my mediumship manifests in a way that I'm able to draw the essence of them, draw the picture. Now, the picture isn't a photograph. It's as close as I can get as a non-artist to what I feel somebody looks like, but there should be a recognition. So if I'm drawing someone for you, there should be a recognition from you, an emotional connection in some way, and you should know that that is the person that I'm speaking about. So that's one side of it. We use that a lot in demonstration work on the platform, showing audiences how that connection is made. But it's also done on a one-to-one basis, where you can book an appointment and come, and then hopefully someone that relates to you would step forward. And then the other side of it is more assessment, or as you described it, art that's influenced by the spirit. And that's very much about drawing inspirationally for someone. So just let's use you as an example. It might be that you come to me and you say, "Lynn, please will you create something for me from the spirit world?" And then I move into the power, and I would put create a picture. It might be symbols, it might be patterns, it might be colors, it might also have a face in the middle. And then what I would do is explain why I've drawn what I've drawn, what the meanings of the different symbols are, and maybe there would be some advice for you, or something from the spirit world to help you with your pathway, either spiritual or physical, sometimes your physical pathway as well. So there's those two sides to it. And also, there's many people out there feeling they are inspired by the spirit as they paint. And actually, I think a lot of painting is inspired by the spirit world. It's inspired by either the spirit inside of you or the spirit externally. So one or the other. Many artists who are not considered to be mediumistic still say the inspiration comes from somewhere else.
Yes, that totally reminds me of J.K. Rowling sitting in the train, and then this Harry Potter just sort of like downloads into her head.
Downloads.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's
Yeah.
like real inspiration. It,
Exactly.
spirit is in the word inspiration too, so it's
Yes.
kind of
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Inspired.
yes, yeah, so the last time that I visited the Arthur Findlay College, I did a Spirit Artist Week with you. And one of the frameworks that really helped me understand, and also that I really love, was your metaphor or example using the different brainwave states and states of consciousness as the Empire State Building. And
Oh,
then what kind
yes.
of like when we talk about being awake and when we are like inspired, can you maybe repeat that Empire State Building
I will,
metaphor?
but it's very difficult to do it without a diagram, really. But yes, I will explain. The way that I try to explain, obviously, within the mind, there is not an Empire State Building, nor are there necessarily lines by which we move. It's an altered state of consciousness and it's an expanded awareness. But a way to explain it is to suggest that people think about the Empire State Building. And of course, it's a very tall building and part of it is under the ground. And also, there are many, many, many floors. So I think there's about 90 odd floors above the ground and probably 60 odd below. So if you think about that and you think about how you would feel if you were standing right on the they call it the something platform at the top, I can't think, the visual platform
Yes,
at the top,
the
right at the top. Yeah,
yeah, the
that's it,
observatory.
the observation platform. If you
Yes.
were right up there at the top of the Empire State Building, looking out over New York, you would be wide awake and you would be in beta then. So beta is the number of brainwaves. It's the name we give to a section of brainwaves. So you'd be in beta and you'd be wide awake and you'd be able to see, feel, hear everything. If you could also imagine then that you would get in a lift to go down through the Empire State Building. Your clairvoyance, your clairvoyance, your clairaudience, your clairsentience. People imagine it's a long way away from the here and now, but actually, it's only a movement of the mind. It's only a very small adjustment of the mind. And that very small adjustment, if you like, relates to a couple of floors. So you get in the lift and you go down a couple of floors, and that's where you'll find those clairsentience, clairaudience, clairvoyance, the clear hearing, the clear seeing, the clear sensing. And then on various levels below that, depending on how your own mind works, there will be other layers at which you can receive different sort of, if you like, different inspiration. So below the clairvoyance, if you were to sort of go get in the lift and go down maybe three or four more floors, or even a few more, and you go into the alpha part, then you're going to get into your visioning and your dreaming and your it's the levels which we move through when we go to sleep, if you like. So, you know, when we're awake, we're right at the top, and as we drop down that in that lift through the levels of consciousness, eventually when we pass the ground level and we go under the ground, that's when we're falling asleep. So it's all the levels between and all the consciousnesses that are available to us. Probably the best thing is if in some way I can post up a diagram, and then everyone can see it a little
Yeah.
better, a little easier. Did
I
I
can make
make
that
myself
work.
clear, or was that
Yeah.
jumbled?
No, I think what was helpful for me when I was participating in the Spirit Art Week is that when I got in, I really had no clue. Like I remember coming in and the same evening we just got started in a group. We were paired up in twos. And I was with this American lady, and you were like, okay, just tune into each other's energy and just draw what comes up. So I dropped a little bit of my mind, like down in the lift, I went a few floors down, and then I can perceive cl clear vision. And then I saw a face, and I was like, okay, I'll just try and draw this face for, with my minimal drawing skills. So I drew the face. It was a man with a heavy mustache. And then the lady I was drawing it for said, oh, I think I know who that is. I think that is my great grandfather. And I actually have a picture on me. So she took out the picture, which was this old black and white picture of this man with this heavy mustache. And I was shook. I was like, wow, this was even for me. Like, I'm kind of used to seeing things. This was such a beautiful, tangible proof of what of spirit that I was perceiving, right? But then I was like, was this really spirit art, or was I just like cheating a little bit? Because I just saw the face, and then I sort of like tried to draw it to, and then, but then what I've learned that week is that there are several states you can like drop into. So let's say I would have gone into the lift and dropped even further down, a little bit more towards alpha and even theta states. I can then. I'm still conscious, of course, but it feels like I'm not really there. And then it's like I am not consciously making the decision to draw a man, let's say, or even a mustache. It just comes out of me. And that is like, it feels like inspired drawing, and like you can also do inspired writing, or like, morning
Absolutely,
pages.
it's more or less the same level as inspirational writing. It's on the so very often when I
Yes.
finish drawing a picture, I'll go straight into inspirational writing and write a message at the bottom because it's very much on the same level. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
And what all happened with you is you had an amazing experience right at the beginning, and then you decided to investigate that. Some people don't get that amazing experience until further through the course, but you got it first minute, first day, and then you had to start thinking to yourself, okay, so was that me or was that coming from somewhere else? And what I would always say to anybody is part of it is you, it's your mind. It's your mind that the spirit world are working with. So part
Yeah.
of it is always a cooperation between you and the spirit world. How much of it of you and how much of it is the spirit world is what changes as you practice. So you might start off with 80% of it being you and only 20% of it being inspired by the spirit. And that might be
Yes.
like when you first saw that first face, the spirit world showed you a little flash of a face and then you drew it. So that was consciously you drawing 80% and them
Exactly.
just giving you a little bit. And then what you work on is moving to a level of consciousness where you're coming to a point where it's 50% the spirit world and 50% you. The hardest bit to get past is to shift it the other way so that it's 60% you, 40%, and then 70, 30, and so on. And what you're working towards is about 80, 20 the other way, where 80% of it is the spirit inspiring, and 20% of it is you
Just you.
connecting with that and facilitating that. And personally, unless you are working in a really, really deep sleep state, personally, I don't think anybody gets past about 80%. There has to be 20% of you in there. Because you
Yes.
have to move
Yes.
hands, you've got to you've got to
Yes.
choose colors, you've got to there's got to be a consciousness in there somewhere, unless you're working in what we call a somnambulistic state, which is a sleep state, which is right down, if you like, in the delta waves, right down under the ground, under the Empire State Building. You facilitate, you move out the way, and the spirit world take over. As so far in my career, I've never done that. So it's not either it's not my way or it's along the pathway ahead for me, or it may be something that I will never do. I will never be involved in. I don't know. It's something that happened a lot more in the past historically, and we don't seem to need that sort of proof anymore. People are
Yes,
very
yeah.
happy to be proven in a much lighter state of awareness, and people are much more happy to accept that it's coming from somewhere else without you literally being flat out, asleep, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, you can still perform it on a platform too, because if you go on a platform, I saw you work, you drop like down quite a bit in the elevator and down the Empire State Building, because then you enter almost like a trancey state where you
That's
can
right.
then put both hands with two pencils at the same time on the paper and then draw it without you really consciously interfering in what's happening, right?
That's quite right, but that has taken a lot of years of practice. You
Yes.
know, it's not something that I just immediately could do. When I first started to sit for that ability and to try to get to that place in the levels of the Empire State Building, I mean, I'd have an eye up here and an eye down here, or a nose over here and a mouth down. So it
Yeah.
took a long time for the messages, the impulses in the brain, for me to understand them enough to be able to move my hands and almost not be able to be conscious at all of what's happening.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, we tried. Like I worked with the blindfold, and then it was just one pile of scrambles, but it was really interesting to surrender and let spirit influence me, you know, and be this co-creator with spirits, which is so nice.
Absolutely. And what you have to remember is that, if you have some artistic ability and you are also someone who is quite visually lucky in that you look at a face and you can see where the eyes go, where the nose go, and where's the mouth. So that will be already in your consciousness, that will be already in your mind. And even with your eyes closed or with a blindfold, you should be able to get things roughly into the right place. When you know that you are not consciously drawing is when the pencils move independently of one another. So, for instance, if you're using your mind, your pencils are probably going to draw the eyebrows, and then they're going to come down, and then they're going to draw the eyes, and then they're going to come over, and they're going to draw a nose, then they're going to come down, and they're going to draw a mouth. So your mind remembers that that's how a face is. When the pencils do this up and down, over and then it's impossible for your mind to follow those pencils. And then you know you're being inspired, that you're
Yes.
not following a mental memory of how a face looks. And that's the difference between the two.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to watch. I want to switch gears a little bit, because I also, what you were talking about in the beginning of this episode is like spirit art, being like a little bit twofold, and one is also the assessment. So one, let's say someone comes to you and it's like, hey, can you do like an assessment or maybe draw like a spirit guide? And you did that for me, which is really interesting. My dad even framed his portrait that you did of his spirit guide, which is
Oh,
really
bless.
interesting. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about this concept of spirit guides. Mainly because when we talk about working mediumistically, we are connecting with maybe, you know, past loved ones, like maybe a grandfather or a grandmother that has gone on to spirit. But we also hear a lot about spirit guides, maybe being with you, and there are some sort of like guidance of spirit around us. Can you maybe talk a little bit about how you perceive spirit guides to be a part of our existence?
I can tell you some stories which will perhaps help you understand. But let me start by saying, very often when you are beginning your development spiritually, and when you are starting to become clairvoyant, the first voices you hear in your head are of past relatives, or can be your own voice. So you think you're going a bit crazy because you think you're speaking to yourself. But the reason for that is that the mind is an incredibly clever thing. And if you suddenly heard other voices in your head, you could think you were having a bit of a breakdown. Or, lots of people who end up in psychiatric care are there because they have voices in their head and they can't cope with it. Very often the mind will turn a voice into someone you know to make you comfortable with it. So, because you knew your grandmother or because you knew your grandfather, the first voice that you will hear the first way that your mind will translate those messages will be into people you know. So what we have to remember is communication is thought. It's not necessarily that you hear a voice. You feel a thought in your mind, and then your mind coats it or covers it or dresses it in words. Otherwise, if we were communicating with the spirit world and we got an Italian grandmother coming through for her Italian daughter, I wouldn't be able to bring a message because it would be in Italian. And unless I understood Italian, I wouldn't be able to translate that. So the Italian mother will think to me, and my mind will pick up the thought, and then the thought can be translated in my way into words. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so if we go on from there to say spirit guides is a difficult concept because people either need to feel a spirit guide around them or maybe don't need to feel a spirit guide around them. Now, for me, I'm very human. I'm extremely, extremely human. So therefore, I need the security of communicating with somebody that I know in the spirit world. I don't want to just open up and it be anybody. I want
Yeah.
the familiarity of somebody. I want somebody who comes forward and I know who they are. Now, there are many
Yeah.
other mediums who don't need that. They're quite happy to accept that they're communicating with an energy, with a consciousness beyond this world, and they don't need to put it into a human form. So, in some ways, it's about the medium and what the medium needs, and the spirit world will accommodate that. So for me, I've always seen guides and inspirers, and I've always needed to know who they are. Other people don't. Okay. The other thing is, when I see spirit guides around other people, I see them in my way. So I always see cultures or nationalities, different cultures, different nationalities, and I'll always know what that guide is there for. So it might be an I don't know, a Egyptian man, and I will know whether he's to do with the art or whether he's to do with some other aspect of mediumship. And that will come through in the way that he's dressed, in the way that he feels, in what he says or what he communicates to me. It could even be in the vibrancy of the embroidery on a piece of clothing. It'll be something that speaks to me from that picture that tells me what that guide is there for. The way that I see guides and the way that other people see guides may not be the same, and that's where the difficulty arrives. So just for instance, there's a lovely lady in Ireland called Lorna Byrne. And she's written a book called Angels in My Hair. And she's a healer. I think she's Catholic, and she's a healer, and she's a beautiful soul. But she sees the energy around people as angels, as archangels. So they're always guardian angels, beg your pardon, guardian angels. So she will always describe the energy around someone as a guardian angel. I might not see it in the same way. I might see it as a Native American or a Englishman or a Spanish gypsy. She will see them as angels. Other people would see them perhaps as animals, animal spirit, or something else. So how they interpret that energy is very much about how they see spirit. Now, for me, I've often been able to draw a spirit guide for someone, and they've said, yes, I've seen her, or yes, I know that energy. And that for me has been the proof that I've needed that I'm not wasting my time just drawing something that nobody understands.
Yes.
And that's been built up over a number of years. So, and on a couple of occasions, I have drawn for somebody the same guide, but with maybe 12 years in between. And so I've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guides. Can't possibly remember what I drew for
Yeah.
someone 12 years ago. However, the drawings are not exactly the same, but more or less the same. And again, that's proof that I'm seeing the energy in a certain way. And that may be also the way they see it. So it's a quite a flexible thing. You have to have quite an open mind about guides. But if I tell you one other thing, as I went through my development from very early on, so I came into this when I was about 30. From very early on, I used to see a Native American Indian, and then after a while, I saw a Chinese man, and then after that, I saw a little man with Pickwick glasses, and there was one after another after another. Okay. And more recently, the control that I work with, so the control is the word I use for guide, the control that I work with because he works with me in the trance state. He likes to be known as Edgar, but more recently, I have got to know him very well. And just before I went up to Stansted as a tutor, so that would be about 13 years ago, I was sitting for spirit in the morning doing a meditation, and I saw a row of people coming down a mountain path in this meditation, and they started to walk towards me. And as they started to walk towards me, I could see firstly the Indian, and then the Chinese man, and then the little Pickwick man, and then there was a lady, and anyway, there was a whole queue of guides who were coming towards me, and I cried because I thought, oh, they've all come to see me. They're all on this morning. They've come to see me, and they made in my mind a semicircle around me, and the last person to come in was Edgar, my control, and he said, "We've come to spend some time with you." He said, "Just sit in the power for a minute or two." And I did. I just sat quietly. I cried most of it. And then he said, "And now we must go, but I want you to watch." And he moved into the center of the circle. And all the other guides, one by one, blended into him. So they were all, what he was showing me was they were all aspects of the energy. And what I believe had happened was, as my development changed and as I moved sort of up through the levels of advancement, each time I was challenged, I saw it as a new guide coming in. So maybe I created a space in my mind to believe there was another guide there, but actually it was another aspect of Edgar, or the power that I was working with. Does that make sense? So some people will see just one guide and believe that that guide is their guide and there's no one else there. I believe that Edgar, although I do see him as an individual, I do see him as a person, but I don't believe he's all there is. I believe he connects to everything else there is around me, and it's all in a way channeled through him because it makes me comfortable that way. And it makes me a better medium because I'm comfortable. There was a man, there's a man called Maurice Barbanel. Maurice Barbanel was the editor of Psychic News, and he worked for the spirit world for 60 odd years. And he had a guide. And when the guide first came through to him, in the very early days of his learning, the guide would make him jump. So he would sort of jump in his energy, and he would know that the presence of that guide was there. He used to sit in a circle, and the circle was for his development. So there were other people who were watching what was happening. And the circle named the guide Big Jump, because every time the guide came close, Maurice Barbanel would jump. And as time went on, the guide manifested more and more clearly through Maurice, and the group asked him what would he like to be named, and the name he chose was Silver Birch. And I don't know whether any of the people who watch your podcast would know of Silver Birch, the Silver Birch books, but they are incredibly spiritual, beautifully written. Silver Birch was a very, very enlightened being, and the way that he explained spirit and the realms of spirit and how things were dealt with through spirit were absolutely beautiful and very, very interesting indeed. So they worked together, Maurice and Silver Birch, and there's hundreds of books out there, for about 60 years. Now, just before Maurice Barbanel died, Silver Birch came to the circle again, and he said, "I have something I want to tell you all." Oh, I've missed a bit out. During the time that he would manifest, or over the years, he was thought to be a Native American. And even there's a spirit artist called Ponsin who drew him and drew him as a Native American. So he was even seen as a Native American. And just before Maurice Barbanel passed away, Silver Birch came into the circle and said, "I have something I need to tell you all." He said, "I am not, nor have I ever been, a Native American." And they were all so shocked because that's what they'd seen, that's the way he'd manifested, that's the way he'd been drawn. And they all asked, "Well, why did you step forward as a Native American?" And his answer was, "Because it pleased my medium." In other words, the spirit world will take whatever form they need to take to allow you to be comfortable with what's happening to you. And if that means that they take the form of a Native American or a tiger or whatever they, Black Panther or whatever ever
Or
else
an
form they
angel.
take, or an
BS.
angel or a whatever. That's the form they'll take because they want that communication, they want that inspiration, they want to be able to work with you, so they'll make it as easy as possible. So
They want to
I
be
think it's a,
recognized.
well, yeah, I think it's a bit of a cooperation between what you need as a medium and what the spirit world need to be able to work with you.
Exactly. So when people are listening and they are not necessarily a medium,
Yeah.
they still probably have spirit around them, sometimes also trying to be an inspiration or a guidance in some way. And I would love to hear
Absolutely.
from you maybe an example story in which you really felt like, wow, this was such a good example for seeing spirit being like a guidance or influencing in some way.
In somebody else or in me?
Well, I remember you must have loads of stories, so you can choose whatever you want to tell us. But I remember this one story where you were like trying to meet up with some girls, and then the date, like, it wasn't clear when you were going to meet up, and it got postponed and postponed. That was such a fantastic story.
It's quite a long story, but a friend of mine called Susie wanted me to meet some of her friends who had opened a shop about 2 hours away from where we lived. And she kept saying to me, "Will you come with me, Lynn? Will you come with me? They want to meet you. They love what you do." And I kept saying, "Well, I will, but I don't know when. And are you sure they want to meet me?" And anyway, she kept insisting. And we tried to make some dates, but I was working full time at that time. I wasn't working full time with mediumship. I was working full time in business, and finding a date that we could all manage was really difficult. So we'd made several dates, and then we couldn't manage it. And in the end, we decided on a date, which was, I think, the 5th of December, which was about 2 months ahead, and we made the plan that we would go. And on the morning of the 5th of December, we jumped in the car. We drove 2 hours towards the outskirts of London, and we went to this little shop. We pulled up our car just outside the shop, and went in. And the ladies were lovely. They gave us a cup of tea, and we were chatting away. And suddenly the door was pushed open, and a lady walked in very determinedly. But as she did so, I started to shudder. I had a big reaction, and I sort of went. And my friend looked at me and said, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, no, I think I am." I pulled myself together a bit and I said, "Yeah, I think I am. I'll just go outside for a minute." So I walked out of the shop and walked about 25 yards up the road, not very far, but stood with my cup of tea, drinking my tea. And as I stood there, there was this sort of sh feeling. And there was straight away in my mind a young man. And he said to me, "That's my mum. You must speak to my mum." And I said, "I'm sorry, darling." I said, "I'm on holiday." I said, "I've only come to see the. I don't know your mum, and I've only come to see these people. I'm not working today. Shh, you must speak to my mum, please. Please speak to my mum." So I said, no. I said, I'm having a break today from mediumship. I can't just go and talk to your mum. But he was still present and he wouldn't go away. So I said to him, I tell you what, if you want me to speak to your mother, you'll have to get your mum to speak to me. At which point he disappeared. And I thought, oh, I haven't got to do this. How lovely. Anyway, I still stood drinking my tea, but I recovered a bit from all the jumping around. And so I thought I'll walk slowly back towards the shop. And as I walked back to the shop, the lady came out of the shop. She passed me on the pathway and she got into a car next to mine, which was just parked by the side of the shop. And I sort of went, oh, I haven't got to do it. That's nice. I haven't got to do it today. And then just as I was about to pass her car, she wound down her window and waved her finger at me and said, can I speak to you? Can I tell you about my son? And so I went over to the window and I said to her, yes, let me talk to you about your son rather than you talking to me about your son. And I said he was stabbed. And then I understood why I was doing this. Because his girlfriend had stabbed him 54 times. And so obviously what I was feeling was part of the evidence that he was bringing when this lady first came into the shop. And I went on to say, your son is here and he's telling me this and he's telling me that. She started to cry. And then I heard him say, you've got to stop her. You've got to stop her. So I said to him, stop her from doing what? You've got to stop her. You've got to stop her. And I said, I can't stop her. You'll have to tell me something that will stop her from doing whatever it is she's going to do. And he said, look in her handbag. And I looked down on the seat in front of the window that was open. And there was a handbag which was open and full of pills. And he then said to me, tell her she's got to stay for my son. So I said to her, your son knows what you're about to do. And he's telling you need to stay for his son. His son was only 2 years old and he didn't want his mum to make the mistake of committing suicide and leave his son without the care because obviously his son's mother, who was the person who'd stabbed him, was then in jail. So the only person that his son had was his mum. So I went on to say that. She cried. She handed all the tablets to me and out of the window. And she pulled, in the end, we said goodbye. She pulled away and she went off to do what she was going to do, which was she'd gone into the little shop to buy a candle because she was going to go to the graveside of her son. And her husband had died exactly a year later. So the two of them were buried together, and she was going to light the candles, and then she was going to take her life with the pills. Luckily, she didn't do that. But when I went back into the shop, it was when I found out that she had driven from 2 hours the other side of London, across London to get to that point, and I had driven 2 hours from the other side of London to get to that point. And the spirit world had taken advantage of the fact that we were both in the same space at the same time. And they sometimes, even when you don't want to do something, it's your job to do it. And so even my objection to working on that day, they got over it because they did what was necessary to bring us together to allow something to happen for that young man. And that's what I think is remarkable, is that she just was following her instinct that day. She something in her, probably her son, guided her to go into that shop to get that candle. And then her son came to me. And if she hadn't have come in that shop that day, and if I hadn't have made it on the 5th of December, then it may have had a very different outcome. So it's very interesting that the spirit world can sometimes pull everything together to allow something to happen.
Talk about inspiration.
Absolutely, you know, and oh, when I think back on it now, I think it's quite remarkable because, you know, we had tried to make that arrangement so many times. Now, had we not been able to make it because in some way the spirit world was guiding me not to make it on certain dates, and when we got to the right date that they could see was the right date, then they were like, yeah, you got to do it then, you know. Was that inspiration coming to me? What's the same happening to her? You know, was she thinking she might go, she might not, she might go, she might not, but was her son then inspiring her, go on this day, mum, come on that day? And you know, we'll never
Yeah,
know,
we'll
we'll
never
never know.
know. And it's just like, wow, it's this fine line of trusting and surrendering in the bigger bigness of everything, and the
I mean,
humbleness of us, you know, perceiving it the way we can.
I could have not done that day. I could very easily, if I'd been able to get away with it, I wouldn't have done that day because I was, you know, I was doing such a lot of work, and I'd seen that day as a day off for me. But sometimes, like I've said to you, sometimes the job is just yours. Sometimes the job very definitely isn't yours.
Is not
So
yours.
sometimes, yeah. So sometimes I'll see something happening and I'll say to the spirit, what is that for me? And they'll say, no, nope, it's not for you to deal with. On that particular day, it was my job. That was my job. So yeah. And luckily, it worked. Whether she's still alive now or not, I don't know. But she certainly didn't pass away on that day in the way that she had intended. So that was good.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What a remarkable story.
I think it now, but I didn't think it so much then. I sort of took it. I think you take these things in your stride as you go along, and it's only when you look back and you think that's really quite remarkable. You know, not that I stopped her from doing what she was going to do, but the fact that the adjustments that must have been needed to be made in the spirit world in order to bring us together to allow something to take place, that's remarkable.
Yes, very much. So, for listeners that are very curious and interested about all of this, but they don't necessarily think like I am a medium or in any way, we are all humans. We all have our own spirit bodies. We are all connected to spirit. And thus, we can also all, feel into what is around us a little bit. Do you have any like tips for people listening to connect a little bit more in the loving spirits that are around us all the time, even though we can't see them?
I think the first thing to say is that I agree with you. Everybody has a connection to the spirit world, and but some people simply don't want it. Some people simply don't want that connection, or some people are afraid of it. And if you're afraid of it, then it's a barrier. You can't be afraid. In 30 years of working with the spirit world, I've never seen or experienced anything that's made me fearful of the spirit world. It's always been a very loving presence that's there. I think everybody in their lifetime will have something extraordinary happen to them, something that they can't quite explain. Some of us, excuse me, when those things happen, some of us then explore more. So, and some of us find out that we have got more of a gift. Other people put it to one side and just put it as something that happened that was remarkable, but I don't want to go into it any further. So it really depends on the individual and what they want. If they want to make that contact with the other world, or whether they prefer to stay just in this one. And there's not a right and a wrong. There's nothing that says that one way is right and one way is wrong. It's about how you feel as a person and as an individual. If I was to give anyone any tips, the first thing I would say is you need to listen to the still small voice within you. So mediumship and psychic awareness, so psychic is the soul. Soul awareness is very much about listening to your own body, so listening to your own thoughts and listening to your feelings. So we talk about gut feeling, and we talk about, you know, following your gut feeling. And so many people will say to you, oh, I felt that, but I didn't do anything about it. But being perceptive and listening to and responding to your gut or responding to the feelings that you have is the first stage. You have to sort of trust yourself. So we always say that the best mediums are good psychics first. They're people who trust their own feelings, they're people who trust their own thoughts, they're people who don't mind saying what they feel, so long as obviously they say it in the right way and they don't hurt anybody. And then forward from that will come the need to know more about what's going on in the spirit world. And that just comes through meditation, comes through quietening the mind, stilling the mind, and moving through those levels of consciousness. I'm sure if you spoke to anybody, any of your friends who drive a car, they will have got into their car in the morning on the way to work, and they will have driven to work, and they'll suddenly reach a roundabout just outside their work or a turning, and they'll think, "Oh my goodness, I've driven all that way, and I don't remember the journey." Well, that's the space, that time where the mind relaxes, when you're perfectly safe, you're driving the car, you're going the same way you always have. But your mind is detached slightly or expanded slightly to allow yourself still to drive safely, but to be able to perceive other things. Because you'll have been thinking about something else or experiencing something else all the way on that journey. And then suddenly you'll come back into reality and you'll think, oh, I'm here. Oh, I need to park the car now. So everybody moves into that space. It's just what they do in that space when they get there. And again, that's about what you want to know, whether you're curious and you want to know more about it, or whether you're someone who just really, that's not for me. And that's fine. You know, we're not here to persuade anybody to believe or to think differently. We're just here to offer them an opportunity if they want it.
If you feel that, yes. Very, very beautiful, very inspiring. These conversations and maybe a little bit more of a practical way of thinking about it with the Empire State Building. It just makes it so
Yeah,
much more digestible, I think.
I think that was just something that I came up with the spirit world when I first started to teach, was because it's a difficult concept to teach the altered levels of awareness. We teach it in a very physical way with the Empire, well, I do with the Empire State Building. Other people have got other analogies. I teach it in a very physical way so you can see what I mean. But actually, if you think about awareness starts quite closed. So when you first come into the spirit world, sorry, into a connection with the spirit world, if you imagine a flower in bud, you maybe have one leaf unfurling, and so you're collecting a bit of information, or you're starting to allow the spirit world to influence in very small ways. And what you're working towards is that flower to bud, and not only to open, but really to open wide, so that your perception is much greater. So all those levels of consciousness are between the closed bud and the open flower, if you like. And when you are working with your consciousness, your awareness wide open, then you will feel things in the body, sense things, smell things, hear things. You're using the whole of your body as a tool, and you're allowing the spirit world to influence into the mind, and you let it come through the voice, or you let it come through the hand in the form of painting. But it takes a while for that flower to unfold. It doesn't happen overnight. It's one of these slowly evolving flowers that the more work you do, the more work you do on yourself, the more interested you are, the more you learn, the more your awareness opens. So.
Yes, very. That's another beautiful metaphor. And it's and just, like you say, just open your awareness. What do you see? I remember like 3 to 4 weeks before I was going to go to the Otto Findlay College and study for the first time there, I started seeing dragonflies everywhere. And I just noticed them. My mind wanted to know what it means right away, but I was like, okay, I'll just see them. I'm aware of them, and I'll find out the meaning later. And the first evening that I sat in the Otto Findlay College, there were like four teachers. You were one of them, and you stood up on the platform to introduce yourself, and you were wearing this huge dragonfly necklace. And I was all the way in the back, and I was like, now I know I need to be with you.
Oh, isn't
This
that
was what it
fun?
meant. Yes.
Yeah, because dragonflies are really, really important to me. Most people have an attachment to something, either butterflies, dragonflies, or something. Dragonflies have always been a messenger for me. Really brought me some incredible information over the years and given me a consciousness of when my mum's around, because my mum died 26 years ago now. But sometimes a dragonfly will be the indicator that my mum's around. But very often a dragonfly is my yes. So if I have a question in my mind and I'm asking for an answer, I'll say to the spirit world, I need a dragon, you give me a dragonfly. And if it's midwinter, that's a bit difficult for them
Yes.
because
Yeah.
Dragonflies really generally aren't around in midwinter, but it'll come in another way. It'll come on the television, or it'll come in a letter, or I'll see a picture, or there'll be something that'll be my yes, or or it doesn't appear, and then I know it's my no,
Yeah.
but it always been a very, very important part of my development, and I've got lots of stories about dragonflies.
Yeah, well, it certainly has been part of our story from you and I together. You even gifted me one beautiful dragonfly pin that I'm cherishing somewhere here on my altar.
I remember, I think I was wearing it, wasn't I? And I just gave it to you. I can't remember. I don't know which dragonfly I gave you. I can't remember, but I hopefully you've got it safe somewhere, and it's important. It becomes part of
Definitely.
your journey too, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so opening up, being the observer, aware, and see what you feel with certain things, I would say. And then if you're curious and you feel the pull, then start to explore it a little bit, and then you'll see where it takes you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing to say is, it's a joyful experience. There's
Yes.
nothing bad. You can't find anything bad in this experience. So it's a joyful experience. And the feeling, the presence of the spirit around you is so comforting, and especially in difficult times of your life when you really need, someone to be there, or something to help you th through difficult times. The knowledge that there is a world outside of this is very comforting, and that that world can impinge on yours and help you through difficult times is also very, very comforting. I think the thing that we have to remember is there is this silly idea that you can contact an angel and ask it to find you a parking space, or contact an angel and ask it to save you from this or save you from that. Now, I'd be very upset if I got to the spirit world and God said to me, Lynn, you're going to be a parking angel. I'd be like, really? I've done all this to be a parking angel? I think that my belief is that the spirit world can't interfere with our daily lives. So although we call them guides, they shouldn't guide us to impact and change anything that changes our pathway. So very often people feel that their guides are going to tell them, what to do about in difficult situations. And you can bet your life, when you've got a difficult situation, that the spirit world aren't there, because that's part of your physical learning. And if you had the spirit world to call on every 5 minutes to say, well, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Well, why would you be here? You're not learning anything, you're not achieving anything, you're not growing, So very often people are saying, why aren't the spirit world here? Why aren't the spirit world helping me through this situation? Well, it's because this is a physical situation. This is something you have to go through yourself. This is something that you're going to learn and grow from. This is something that's going to make you a different person. Having said that, I don't think that they can interfere with physical life. I do think that there are certain things that can be done. So if I tell you a story that I was going down. I was at Stansted, and I was all dressed up for a Christmas platform, to go on the platform at Christmas. And I'd got some very high-heeled shoes on. And I normally come down the big wooden staircase in the center of the college. On this particular occasion, I was going down a back staircase, which was all cement stairs. And I got to the top of a flight of stairs, and I went to hold on to the rail to step down the steps. And I heard very clearly in my mind, "Take off your shoes." So I thought, "Why? You're going to fall. Take off your shoes." So I thought, "Oh, okay, I'll take off my shoes." So I took off my shoes and held them in my hand and thought, "Okay, I'm not going to fall now," and went to climb down these stairs. I climbed down about six, rounded a corner, and fell all the way down the next flight of stairs to the bottom. I bruised everything. I knocked my elbows. I messed up my tights. Ended up in a bundle at the bottom. Luckily, no more damage than that. And I remember sitting at the bottom of the stairs and thinking, why didn't you tell me I was going to fall? And then I thought, oh, you did tell me I was going to fall, but you told me to take my shoes off. And my assumption had been, because I'd taken my shoes off, that I wouldn't fall. But in fact, if I'd had my shoes on, I think it would have been much worse. Because high shoes, trying to stop myself from falling, trying to stop the heels from going into me all over the place. As it was, the shoes had just gone, and I'd put my hands out to protect myself. But I think that fall would have been far, far worse if my shoes had still been on. So I think in some ways, they can help you for something not to be as bad as it might have been. But I don't think they could have stopped me from falling. Because they did tell me, "You're going to fall." But I didn't take any notice. I thought because I'd taken my shoes off, I was going to be okay.
I'll be okay. Yes.
Yeah.
No guarantees there, huh?
I don't, and I also think that, some people tell stories of they were just about to cross a road, and something pulled them back, and a car went straight past and would have hit them if they'd not been pulled back. And I understand all of that, but I think some of that is your psychic senses, some of that is your own sense of your own preservation, and it could even have been the movement of the energy around you that pulled you back. I don't think the spirit world can interfere and change our life path. They can inspire us to make a change, but they can't make that change.
And there it is again, the inspiration that we
Yeah,
can
the
take or
inspiration.
not.
Yeah, that we ha and we have to be the ones that make the decision.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a
Otherwise,
really beautiful.
where would our free will be? We wouldn't
Exactly.
have any free will, would we? So it is all very fascinating, but it's a beautiful journey. And to anyone listening who hasn't got anything, any interest in the spirit world at the moment, but maybe by listening to us is thinking to themselves, "Oh, I might investigate that a bit." Nothing bad out there. It's all lovely. It's all, it's all it, there's only benefit that can be gained from it.
Because it's so easy to be scared of unknown things. We all have a dozen stories about horrible things, and
Yeah.
that is not our experience at all. So that's a really good thing to emphasize there.
I think one thing that we do have to hold in our minds is that, if we believe in this world that there is good, we believe there is bad. So if we believe that there's harmful things there and there are good things, then there's an opposite. There's opposites in everything, isn't there? So, I'm not saying that within the dimensions on the other side of life, there is not there are not some things that might be harmful to you. I think it very much depends on the strength of your mind and how your mind deals with something that comes close that is not so nice. And I also think that it's about whether you even put your mind to it. So I don't even allow myself to think of anything bad. I only think of the good. And I think
Yes.
that's the way to deal with it. I've never come across anything evil or anything horrible or anything that's frightened me. But I do know people who have. And if I tell you another story, a friend of mine, she's a friend now, she wasn't a friend at the time, she was very young. She came to me in the very early days of mediumship, and she was in a real state. And she believed that there was something in her house that was harmful. And she said, "I've seen this creature, and it's got red eyes, and it's drooling, and it looks like a dragon." She said, "And I could cope with it." She said, "But the other day I went into my children's bedroom, and it was leaning over the cot." She said, "And I was so shocked that it was leaning over the cot that I've fallen apart and scared for my children now." And I said, "Okay, let's put that to one side for a minute." I said, "Let's have a chat just about you." And we talked for a minute or two, and it turns out that she was quite mediumistic, and she'd been able to see things since she was quite young. And then I tuned into the spirit world, and I was aware of her grandmother. And I said, "And your grandmother would also have had this ability?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "And your grandmother was involved in a spiritual church?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "In fact, your grandmother, we could Google and we could find out your grandmother, and she was quite famous in her day." And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, your grandmother's telling me that it's her that's looking over your children, and that she isn't a monster with red eyes and drooling jowls, and that it's your perception and it's your fear that's making her into what you perceive." And she cried, and we had a cuddle, and blah 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 blah. And she went home, and from that day to this, she has never seen a red-eyed monster in her house. She often sees her grandmother in her house, and she's now a working, practicing medium on the platform.
Wow.
So her fear was al allowing herself to imagine that that feeling that she was having was something horrible, when in fact it was didn't mean her any harm at all. It was her own grandmother.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show how people can perceive things wrongly in fear.
This story changed my life. I remember you telling it in the first week that I was in the UK, because I myself have been repressing my clairvoyance in a lot, like for years. And when I went to sleep, it sort of like popped up through my subconscious in the most fearful ways, but that was because I was afraid of it. I didn't want it because I want to be normal. And so I saw like weird, distorted versions of what was really there because it was my mind making it that because I was afraid of it. But now that I am like practicing and exploring, I've never seen it that way ever again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
nice.
It's very much a product of the fear. So,
Yes,
isn't
yeah.
it? Nothing,
This is
nothing,
very, very
there's
helpful
nothing to
story.
fear. Yeah, nothing to fear.
Yes. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for enlightening us with these beautiful stories, your wealth of knowledge, and your beautiful presence.
You're ever so welcome. And maybe we've only just touched on things, so maybe we'll do a follow-up sometime and talk about some
Yeah.
further aspects of art and mediumship. But it's been lovely to talk to you.
That would be lovely. Yes. Wow. Thank you, Lynn. If people wanted to connect with you or your work, is there any place they could find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Facebook, Lynn Cottrell. There are two I'm my presence is on in two places, so Lynn Cottrell and Lynn Cottrell Spirit Art. They're better to contact me just Lynn Cottrell, and they'll see a picture of me, so they'll know it's me. Or they can get me on, if they have something they want to ask me, they can get me on my email, which is Lynn underscore Cottrell at hotmail.co.uk. So yeah,
Perfect.
no
I'll
problem.
make sure all the
Cool.
information is somewhere linked so people can find it. All right, Lynn, I wish you a wonderful day. Thank you so
Thank you very much.
much.